I opened the refrigerator. I'm like, why is there ham in the refrigerator? And he's like, the ham was on sale. So you just want me to randomly bake you a ham just for the hell of it? He's like, well, it was on sale.
Well, you go really crazy about the glazing of it and stuff, so probably. I love a good ham.
Who doesn't love a good ham? It's right up there with bacon, but naturally it would be because it comes from the same animal.
Yeah, same dude.
The ham wasn't on the list, obviously, because nobody just puts random Christmas ham or Easter ham after Christmas and Easter on their grocery list. So I was like, well, look, you know, if I'm going to make this ham, I need pineapples and cherries. And
oh, my God. No, you don't. You just need a glaze. That's all I care about. I hate pineapples and cherries on my ham. It just gets in the way. Like, it looks pretty, but I hate it.
I need it to look as appetizing as it tastes. I'm sorry.
Welcome to Rap in Atlanta. I'm Nita Charisse.
And I'm Nikki.
And in this podcast, we have a frank, honest, and open conversation about the FX show Atlanta. We have noticed that there are similar characteristics in each show. And during our discussion, we offer our impressions on what those features are. There is a That's So Atlanta moment in each episode that most clearly and accurately depicts the spirit or quirk that is Atlanta and or is life in the American South.
Dariusisms highlight the special flavor the character Darius brings to the show, because he is easily one of the most layered, complex, and compelling characters on television.
There always seems to be a mystical element or some strange thing that happens beyond all logical reason and sometimes scientific explanation. We've all experienced those kind of moments.
And finally, the SGR moment is very plainly the moment in each show when shit got real. And we are reminded that life is not a game and desperation has the power to motivate any and every possible action.
The title of this episode is Woods. After a dangerous encounter with some fans, Alfred grapples with the downside of fame.
This episode was so surreptitiously deep. I don't think there's any way else to describe it. And this show, the music choices really told a story. And the way the specific shots were laid out explained what was going on in Alfred's mind. But just starting from the top, like, you know, what did you think?
Starting from the top, we start off with Alfred lying on the couch. The apartment looks like it's a mess. And then you see his mom coming in, picking things up, cleaning up, saying that she didn't raise him to be a pig. And he kind of wakes up and he's listening to her. And then she starts humming a gospel song, a gospel song, Leaning on the Everlasting. Yeah. And then all of a sudden she's gone. She leaves. And then you can see that the day is passing by because it gets darker. And then when he wakes up, well, his phone is ringing and it's Earn calling a check on him. And you can tell, I mean, Alfred usually seems kind of sad or really low key, but the way Earn is calling him and checking on him, you know, we already know his mom has passed. It's obvious that it's his mom that was in his apartment. And so you figure out that it was a dream, you know, it wasn't real. And Earn is calling to check on him. Must be like the anniversary of his mom's death, because Earn asked if he's okay, but it's not in the regular way, like if you're just making conversation. So they have their conversation. Earn is calling about business to see if he's signed some papers or whatever. And Alfred really just doesn't seem like he feels like being bothered. He gets off the phone. He doesn't say bye. When he goes into the kitchen and Darius is making pasta in a skillet, Darius asks him the same thing, if he's okay. So it's obvious, like, that something's going on today, you know, and they know, all right, it's the anniversary of your mom's death. We're just going to kind of check on you. So they have their conversation, and immediately, the first time I watched it, I said, okay, it's another it's another episode with just Alfred, kind of keeping in with what they've been doing this season, focusing on certain things. Darius hears the either the horn honks or he knows that that Alfred's about to leave. I think Alfred cuts him off because he's about to go into this thing that happened in his dream. And he said he learned how to make pasta and it's a weird dream with Dharma from Dharma and Greg and Mayor McCheese. And Alfred's kind of like, okay, I'm about to go. When he asks him if it's Sierra and they kind of share this look, I mean, it's a regular conversation, but I mean, I think we've been wondering something and we haven't discussed it on the show. So, we should probably just discuss it now. If we go back to the episode, was it Alligator Man? The very first one? Yes, it was the very first one. When Earn shows up at their apartment and it's obvious that Darius and Alfred are fighting, they're not speaking. We talked about, you know, just between ourselves, how the dynamic was like when a couple is fighting, where when a third party comes in, they can tell that something's wrong, something's off, and you almost feel like you're interrupting something. By the end of the episode, Alfred has forgiven Darius, but again, it's very much like two people in a relationship. And in the middle of the episode, when this other girl comes by, I don't remember her name. I feel like it might be Tara, but I'm not sure. Darius seems like he doesn't approve, or he seems irritated by her. It could be many things. It could be, you know, she's over here too much, which is a common thing that'll happen with roommates. But it also seems like there's more to their friendship. It kind of brought it back when he said, you know, is this Sierra again? You know, I thought you were allergic to girlfriends. That could be a friend teasing his other friend about, you know, I guess you're getting serious about this girl. But it also seemed like there may be something else there. So if you want to share your thoughts about that.
There's a huge LGBT community in Atlanta. The show has touched upon, it's touched upon the LGBT culture here and there. It's also touched upon the trans community, but it hasn't gone into it. And it just doesn't seem like something Donald Glover would gloss over in characterizing the city. Because the show is called Atlanta. The show is very much about the city, the experience and everything. And though we're being introduced to these characters and we're building relationships with these characters, still the main character is the city. So it just doesn't seem like we would go through two seasons of this show and not talk about LGBT. So we figured a long time ago that one of the main characters, that's the only way that it could be just compassionately discussed, you know, without turning off a large portion of the audience who may have some misgivings about what it means to be gay, you know, and Black and living in a city like Atlanta. So we feel like one of the main characters may be either gay or bisexual or there's something going on. And we figured if it's any of the characters, then it's probably Alfred or Darius. Or maybe both. We don't know. And again, we're postulating here, but you just can't live in Atlanta and not encounter LGBT and the Black LGBT experience, you know, which is very much like your Moonlight, going back before the exchange between Darius and Alfred. Initially, I thought that darkening where you see the mom exit the dining room area and then the area there darkens. I thought that signified the passage of time. But then when it shows Alfred's phone, it's 11:46 a.m. So I think it was pretty much signifying that her ghost was there and the light of her energy left. As the phone is ringing, he turns around and looks back, you know, wanting to see if she's still there. Oh, the sadness in his eyes. Again, Brian Tyree Henry, you are such a great actor. But yeah, it was 11:46 that she was talking about. It's almost noon. You need to get up. Not a lot of time had passed. So I think, again, hello, mystical element number one. I'm also wondering, you know, because when you mentioned how Darius starts talking about his dream, then I'm like, is this episode a dream? Is Alfred still dreaming even after he gets up and he leaves with Sierra? And there's a couple of other things that happen in the episode, and there's musical cues where, you know, I did some research because I can't help myself and discovered some things. But his encounter with Sierra, though,
when he gets into the car and his song comes on and she's talking about their experience glowing up or becoming, you know, and then his song comes on and he has that fake smile on his face. Like, he just looks so tortured.
Yeah, I thought so too. But I thought I detected a little bit of, I mean, he hates the song. He's tired of it. But the way he kind of, his look was a little sheepish. Sort of like, it's something that you're tired of, but you're sitting there with a friend, someone that, you know, that knows you, and they're enjoying it. So I thought I detected a little bit of, like, him laughing at her enjoying the song coming on. Like, he wasn't like, oh, yeah, I love this song. Like, let me sing along. But it was kind of like, okay, you know, mainly because it was making her happy. You know, she was acting the way that you would expect him to act. And because he cares about her, or, you know, or he's friends with her, whatever the feelings are, it made him smile a little bit. I didn't think that the entire smile was tortured. It was kind of like smiling at her, because then later, they're going back and forth. They're kind of trading shots at each other. And you expect, he says something to her where you would expect her to go off, and she just cracks up laughing. And he's like, girl, you crazy. So when she was going crazy over a song, I felt like it was in the same spirit. Like, yeah, I'm sick of this song, but this girl is crazy. Cause she's like, ah, yeah. And like, you know, acting like somebody acts when that song comes on the radio. So, but yeah, like I did pick up on the fact, or we know it's been well documented that Alfred is tired of Paperboy. I mean, he is, but, I just felt like some of his smile was genuine, because, it brought her joy, or, you know, caused her to act crazy. And, you know, there were a couple of times where he looked at her and you can see that he does care about her.
I found it interesting that she didn't ask, how are you doing? Like, in the same way that Earn and Darius did.
Well, see, I wondered about that, and I wondered if she even knew. Because later on, when he gets aggravated with her and storms out of the nail shop, right before that, she says, why are you so grumpy today? It seems like, we don't know how long they've been friends, but the fact that he didn't realize that she used to strip at the club, they have become friends since the both of them. This is my opinion. I feel like they've become friends since the both of them have started to become famous, or more recognized. Like, maybe they met through
a performance or something.
And yeah. She was like, oh yeah, remember when you used to strip at that club? It seems like she in turn would know, oh God, it's your mom. Because at first, you know, everybody's asking how he's doing, and then Sarah's picking him up and trying to hang, and, you know, it could be looked at as she's trying to get him out of the house. But I really don't think she knew. I don't think she knows Alfred like that. I think they know each other enough to be each other's support system, because at one point she says, you know, it's nice being with somebody that gets it. And yeah, he gets it, but he's not embracing it. So you really don't have a comrade in that, like, in the way that you think you do. You are with someone who understands that you may have to stop and take pictures. You know, he wasn't tripping like maybe if you were dating someone that wasn't in the industry and you were constantly stopping, they would get irritated. When she was taking pictures with those girls, he was cool, because he understands. But he doesn't get it in the way of like, yeah, I support this, I'm for this. You know, she was saying some very intelligent things to him as far as furthering their careers, about collaborating and things like that. But Alfred's not feeling it, because he doesn't know how to do it. He just doesn't want to. So they differ in that way. But I really feel like they become friends not that long ago, like maybe in the first season when he was playing charity basketball games and, you know, doing interviews and kind of that beginning part of fame. Because, I mean, she strikes me as, you know, she's kind of crazy, but I could not see her being heartless to be like, what's wrong with you? But she had some true things to tell him, though. I mean,
she had some wisdom for him. I think their relationship is surface. And I think it's beneficial for him to be around her, because they're sharing this experience of their recent celebrityhood. Again, it would be a nice cover up for whatever aspects of him we're not yet sure about. It would make sense for her, for him to be seen with her, you know, around town and all of that. And then she's a, you know, whatever he's thinking about with regards to his mother's passing, she presents a nice escape. But like, again, there are certain things that she said in their exchange where his reaction was kind of like over the top. Like when she says, you need to get a manager with a big dick, he's like, I don't know nothing about that. And then when she talks about grooming, and then he's like, oh, for real, you know? And then when she was like, oh, well, you know, we need to give the fans something to talk about. Like, we don't have to fuck all the time. And the way that he looked at her, like,
yeah, like, why would you say it like that? And then back to what you just said about his response to her saying, you know, she said something like, niggas think that grooming yourself is gay. In his oh for real, it was forced casual. Like, he didn't respond the way he did over the first comment, like, wait, what? But he was like, oh, really? Like, you know exactly. Like, it's when you're hiding something and you feel like everybody might know. So you're projecting. And because he didn't say it in a crazy way. It was very laid back, but it was very aware of what he was responding to. Because he's not so much of an idiot that he would overreact in like the seventh grade boy way, like, but he was still like not comfortable. And many times Alfred seems uncomfortable in his surroundings and in what he's supposed to do. And if what we're saying is true, that would really explain why outside of fame, why he might kind of be at ease. Cause if you're hiding something constantly and you have to put on a certain persona because you don't want anybody to pick up on anything, you're not going to be your true comfortable self unless it's just you and your boys or your girls or whoever it is. And if we think back over last season and this season and just the way Alfred acts, it would explain a lot.
But then there's another layer to it. Okay, so that's what Atlanta, I have to mention. The East Point Strip Mall, the way the mall is situated, the signage, the woods behind it, which we see in the shot where he's walked out of the nail salon. And to me, that symbolized like he's on this side of it, but very close to being out in the woods, out in the wilderness. And I'll get more into that later. But then black folks yelling at people in the nail salon for being rough or speaking Vietnamese instead of just going to another shop. I'm like, Sierra, if you're discontent with your experience there are 50 million shops. You can go to any one of them instead of acting a fool and threatening these women. I don't like when the woman doing my nails or whoever's doing my nails is rough either, but I'll get up and leave. Then another thing, the fact that this episode is entitled Woods and we actually go into the woods in Atlanta. I think a lot of people are surprised if they never been to Atlanta before, just how forested the city is. And it is unusual as far as American cities goes, because whereas other cities in the U.S. have about 27% forest or tree coverage, 36% of the city of Atlanta is covered in trees. Here, you are in the woods. And it's so funny because I looked up the symbolism of woods. An analytical psychology, woods are associated with a dangerous, dark, demonic, diseased place poised outside of cultivation, reason, and intellect. So with Atlanta, like, there's so much potential here, and yet there is so much, like, the juxtaposition of the city with the woods is so representative of that, you know, that weird dichotomy between just so much. There's so many colleges and universities out here, but then there is so much like, oh, well, it don't make sense, but it's what we do and it's how we do, you know, racially, socially. And but then there's some other stuff that I found out about wood symbolism, too. We'll get into that. But yeah, the woods in Atlanta. So Atlanta.
OK. And well, actually, my that's so Atlanta moment was also Sierra screaming at the women in the nail shop. Again, there are so many things that it doesn't only happen in Atlanta, but Atlanta is black. So this is something that you're going to see. But the other layer that it's been a common thread in our discussions, even when we talk about season one, the way that you have to put on and stunt. No one likes when a nail tech is rough, but she or speaks in another language, it kind of feels like, okay, they're probably talking about me. And if you're going to carry on the persona that Sierra does. And so many women, you have to show that you're not going to be disrespected. It has to be over the top, because I'm the same. I'm not going to keep going to a place that does not want me there. One of the reasons why Sarah won't take her business elsewhere is because it feels good to her to act like that. If she goes somewhere where she's treated right, she won't be able to throw her weight around. And I'd say part of the reason, she's young and humans have their habits. I also think that she's like, this is the one that I like to go to. Even though it's ridiculous. It's like, you obviously have the money to go wherever you want. You could probably get somebody to come to where you live and do it. And if you're in that kind of situation, it's unlikely that somebody's going to come in your house, take care of your nails and feet, and not respect you. Because if you have the money to have somebody make a house call, it'll be all good. But Sierra wants to go where she wants to go, and she also wants to show, like, ooh, you know, she has power, and, you know, she got this other nail tech fired, so let that be a message. I, on the other hand, don't want to go anywhere that's that tense, where I have to raise my voice and act a fool like that. So, that's my That's So Atlanta moment, because in Atlanta, I feel like there are more people that are probably on a reality show, or, you know, it's industry. So at any moment, you could be walking with people who are trying to do something. Case in point, we were at the Natural Hair Show, and we're walking behind these three girls who have a cameraman. We don't know who they were or what they were doing, but someone was documenting them walking into this hair show. They were all very pretty, you know, but that's not a strange thing. So whereas in New Orleans, somebody acting a fool over their nails, that could just be like Candace that lives around the corner. And but in Atlanta, it's probably somebody that's local famous or on the cusp of being like big time famous.
Man, that's my mama, because yeah. I've gone to the nail salon with her, and she's just like, hold up now. That's my foot. Yeah. Like, let's go, mom. Yeah.
I've always felt if I have to act like that, I don't want to be there afterwards, because I don't in any way think that you are such an above board human that won't make you want to hurt me more. So I'm going to leave. Kind of like if you act fool at a fast food restaurant, sometimes I make decisions like, okay, this food is already trash. What are they going to do to it? Because I acted crazy. Let me go somewhere else where I don't have to worry about that.
Well, with nail salons, I'm like, okay, are they going to use sanitized tools on my hands after I've like torn this place up? Or do I just need to go ahead and leave?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm just like, if you've shown me that you are not interested in my service, or I feel like you're disrespecting me in some kind of way, I'm not going to spend my money there or my time there. I'm just going to leave. I guess other black folks don't believe that.
No, it's like, nah, this is where I want to go. It's like, those girls can be sitting there like, let me go ahead and put this nail bed infection on you. It's like, I'm not going to be at anybody's mercy like that. I don't like. Like, that's like being with a hairdresser who's got like a flat iron by your ear and scissors and the power to cut your hair. Yeah, you could act a fool after they cut your hair, but it's still gone.
And then your ear be all crusty from that hot dog burn you got from right. with the curling right. iron.
I think some people, they just want to do that. They feel like every encounter with the public or someone who's performing a service for you is supposed to be like, yeah, boy, now amuse me. And you can, I mean, there are layers to that. If you've never had anything or have never felt like you were worthy of being respected, or you felt less than with as black woman or black man, that's not an unusual feeling. It's like, this is my chance to feel like something. It makes some people feel good. It just stresses me out.
Yeah, I don't have time for that. I want to have as a pleasant an experience as possible. Not saying that I haven't cut up, but when I'm at the point where I cut up, then I leave after I've cut up.
Yeah, it's not like, no, finish the job on my body while I'm vulnerable to you.
Even before they go to the nail salon, because they went to that clothing store beforehand, right?
Yes.
Because that's where Sierra was dropping all that knowledge about management. But, you know, Alfred's in there. And if you listen to what he's saying to that woman who appears obviously afraid of him being in the establishment.
Oh, my God. She looked like, oh, my God, just please. She was like, she all but turned her face and like squinted her eyes shut. Like, oh, my God, just do it and get it over with. It's ridiculous.
She looks so fragile. She looks like, my hair bleeds, too. Like,
He's just the guy walking around the store. And in fact, he said, I'm just going over here, okay? You know?
Isn't it ridiculous that you have to say that? You have to treat every instance like you're a hostage negotiator. Like you're going in, all right, here we go. Dude's just trying to buy some clothes.
He wasn't even interested in buying clothes. He was there because she was there. And she felt like, we need to change your image. And he probably will need to change his image if he's going to continue to pursue this career with any sense of vigor. But then he's like, oh, you just going to boss these white people around? She's like, somebody's got to. And then the look on his face, like, okay.
Again, that a lot of the things she said, nobody wants somebody famous to look like them. She's right. Everybody want to be a black girl, but the black girls ain't making no money from it. She's right.
Tell it. That was, oh my goodness. Most of us have heard the saying, everybody wants to be black, but nobody wants to be black. But I like the specificity to black women because, I'm sorry, some people don't like to hear this, but much of what is famous and, finally viewed as beautiful, black women have been doing for years. It's infuriating how other people can do the same things and now it's okay.
Okay, so I was reading that book, Hair Story, and it got to the part where it's like the late 70s, early 80s, and they're talking about when Bo Derek got cornrows in her head, and she was in that movie 10. And then people started referring to them as Bo braids, except for the fact that she went to a country full of black people, and she paid somebody to do that service because they've been doing it for centuries. But they're suddenly bow braids. And then white women were paying like between $200 and $1,500 in the salon to go get those braids done. And they were seen as beautiful and exotic and all of that. Black women during that time were being fired for having those types of braids in their hair. Yes. Like with the military, you know, not being able to get the braids and all this stuff, saying it's too exotic. It doesn't fit with company standards or the certain look that we want to maintain.
Yes. Yes. That. And then also literally making it illegal to braid
without a license
in certain states.
And you'll get fined.
Yeah. Yeah. Like where all the real Americans are, you know, that I work while the rest of us don't work. It's illegal to invest in your trade and actually it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And it's so obvious what it is. And it pisses me off that there are still people who would look at that and, oh, well, and still have something to say about it. You know, the bow braids, those are the same as the Kim Kardashian boxer braids, which are just cornrows that people have been wearing forever. But now they're boxer braids.
I feel like when we go to the second day of the natural hair show, that we're probably walking there like even more upset.
Not even upset, because yesterday, I mean, I have to say, I walked in there and I felt like I was at home, and it was beautiful to see all these black women and all the things that we can do with our hair. Nobody else can do that. I was appreciative, and, you know, because I get used to seeing braids. You know, I love a good crochet. I mean, if I could change my hair every single day, I would certainly do it. Today, when we go, I think I'm going to just be appreciating harder. So, like, just like, yes. Like, I mean, just like stop strangers, hold them by the shoulders, like, rock that. Don't ever let nobody tell you. And you keep doing what you do.
This is the day to, like, shop for those T-shirts with the vigorously pro-black statements.
Yeah, yeah. Don't touch my hair. Don't try me 24/7. Oh, my God. I just realized 24/7. I did not get that. I was just like, those are interesting chapter choices. I wonder what the story is. Don't let your president
get your ass beat.
Yes. One more thing. Speaking of the shirts, I would not be surprised if we go into the hair show today and see that somebody has already made a shirt of Melania Trump sitting next to Barack at the funeral, even though that just happened.
We work quickly, Bill. I'd buy it. I totally buy it.
Let's pause for a break from an exclusive Rappin' Atlanta sponsor.
Are you a basic naturalista? Are you unsure of the curl pattern and porosity of your hair? Do you use store-bought products instead of making your own? Then you are basic. If you're going to rock your natural hair, you need to do it right. Let the professionals over at Know It All Naturalistas get you together. We currently offer 3 packages designed to fix your life. Purchase our introductory Big Chop package, and in no time, you will have a blog, YouTube channel, Instagram, and Facebook dedicated to lecturing other women about their hair. Interested in a more immersive experience? Then you should try the TWA package, where in addition to social media training, you'll learn how to make your own wooden earrings, chunky necklaces, and skincare products. And finally, if you want to become a premium naturalista, purchase the Chunky Twist Out package. The Chunky Twist Out package includes everything in the first two packages, plus a wardrobe starter kit. You will receive your very own military fatigue jacket, head wrap, and a My Melanin is Poppin' t-shirt. For more information, call us at 525-HMPH. Know it all natural. There's levels to this shit.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. The whole conversation about men and grooming, do men really think grooming is gay? Or is that just Sierra's experience? For me personally, I know men who groom. Like, I've met a man who was like, yeah, I do co-wash now because my girlfriend showed me. Keeps my hair looking straight.
Yeah, washing hair is a little bit different from that. There are still some men who think that. I will say that when the term metrosexual came out, I mean, and again, my opinion, the fact that that term had to come out to make people feel okay for doing it kind of shows that, okay, we have an issue here. We had to name something that women have done historically, and if a man wants to do it, and so if something has, okay, that's my thing. Let me say this all over again. All right. When a man engages in something that has typically been a very feminine practice, they're going to have to give a name for it so that they don't feel uncomfortable. It's the same as like manscaping, where it's like, hey, it's okay to take care of your body. Like, because being a man is supposed to be like, I don't care about that. I'm rugged. I'm tough, which is stupid because it's like, so you're just also nasty. Like, you don't take care of your body. I don't see that as feminine, but primping and grooming is looked at as feminine. I think that the stigma has kind of fallen away a little bit more because of the term metrosexual and because of the fact that a lot of men go. My brother goes, and has no problem with it. And if you look at him, you wouldn't look at him as the type that would go, because even when people started to accept, okay, well, I guess men do that, people still had in the back of their minds, oh, gay men or a certain kind of man, you know. But my brother would go in there looking like him. And I mean, if you have to pick, okay, who's going to go in there? A man that may have feminine mannerisms, or my brother, you would not pick him. And he has no problem with it. He doesn't like do it on the slick. From what I remember, I think he was encouraging some of his friends. And when I've been in the nail shop, there's always at least three other men in there, sometimes with their wives or girlfriends, and sometimes they're by themselves. So I think that it's not looked at that as much right now, but I'm sure you could still find a bunch of men who would think like, you know, like that's not being tough. I'm a scrub my nails with my barbecue grill brush because I'm a man.
In my experience, I've seen men, they're usually business professionals, and they shake hands, and you don't want to extend a whole nasty, gnarled, crazy looking hand with overgrown fingernails to somebody in a handshake. I wouldn't take it, you know.
But also, men throughout history, especially in African history, they've gotten themselves groomed. There was this one man who's referenced in that book Hair Story, where he had his hair coiffed to look like horns, so he would be more intimidating on the battlefield. And men have worn wigs. Men have gotten their hair braided. Men have gotten locks for, you know, since time immemorial. So people, regardless of their gender, orientation, or whatever, should want to look and feel good about themselves. And that involves washing your ass, getting your hair cut, having your nails manicured, you know? I found that statement just to be very problematic. Another question I had is, have we reached that point in history where celebrities manufacture drama to maintain social relevancy? Why not just focus on producing great art?
I would argue we reached that point a long time ago when studios like MGM and RKO would, as the kids say, ship to people to make it seem like, you know, they're dating so that they could help each other's careers out. I mean, I don't think that's new. I think what's new is is how quickly it can be done and how quickly you can get the word out, because all you have to do is take a picture and post it or live stream your conversation and what you're doing. You know, even though a long time ago celebrities had more privacy, there were always handlers or like a team of people crafting an image and, you know, saying, why don't you go here and have dinner with this person here and make it look like, or make it seem like, oh, these two people, you know, they're starring in this movie together, but they're also dating. So it'll drive traffic to the movie theater. I just think it's gotten more sophisticated, and it's not something that's limited to Hollywood. It's something that the average person can do. So, because we're all like our little, we're all our own publicists now. You know, publicists aren't the only people who can put out releases or make statements about your next move. You can do it if you have Instagram or Twitter.
Well, I just want to declare that our National Hair Show weekend is real.
We are not making that up. Although I don't see what we would get out of doing that. I don't know what kind of crazy method that would be like. Let's just say that we went to a hair show, but we really didn't.
Well, we weren't just doing it for the sake of this podcast. We did it because
the hair show is real. And in my life right now, I am living my That's So Atlanta moment, because I am currently in Atlanta, which, as I will always say, is another word for black. And I got to be a part of that and see all of the hairstyles. And we had many different encounters that would have been right at home in this actual show.
Yeah, I feel like that woman scooting out of the, like, come on.
Not at a hair show on one of those, I don't know what it's called, our audience out there, but when you break your leg or hurt yourself and it's like you kneel on this scooter to get around. There was a woman in a crowded convention center type place where there are people everywhere, which I'm sure she spent the whole time getting bumped by having to scoot her way through the crowd. She needed to come to the hair show. The dedication was real.
I feel like she should have consulted with a friend, passed on her ticket to that friend and said, look, I need you to stop by this booth, that booth, and this booth to get me my leave-in conditioner, hydrating shampoo, and then some styling gel. And stayed in the bed and got proper bed rest instead of scooting out of that exit looking crazy, like, better not nobody bump me.
She wanted to be in the middle of everything, poor thing. Like, this woman is serious about her hair.
You know, did I tell you about my OBGYN? He had hurt his foot, so he came scooting into my appointment talking about put your feet up in stirrups. I'm like, no, you need to scoot your ass out of here and get me an able-bodied OBGYN.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. Oh, that's terrible. That's horrible. That man is trying to do his job, not pass his patients off to somebody else.
Look, I was going to a team of OBGYNs anyway. Like, at any given appointment, I could meet with one of three OBGYNs. So it wouldn't have been a big stretch for me to just meet with either the other OBGYNs or the midwife instead of him scooting.
But you never know what is going on in that office and what the dynamics are. Maybe somebody's trying to edge him out. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry that you hurt yourself. Guess he won't be here for 6 weeks. He's like, nah, I'm not going to let them take my patient.
Yeah, so then I got to suffer with the scoot.
If my doctor scooted in, I'd be like, man, they don't miss a day of work. Respect.
I did not feel that way. I'm like, are you okay? Do you need to be up on this table instead of me? Anyway, yeah, there were many That's So Atlanta moments just yesterday. Cause you're in Atlanta.
I was like, okay, so it's really like this. I feel like someone is writing this entire day.
That's what it means to live in Atlanta. All right, so continuing on with the show. So Alfred got upset when Sierra took a picture of them together without his permission. He just like, screw this pedicure. And he walked on out of there without any like of the little shoes they give you or anything.
Yeah, he just padded on out.
Then we get that shot of the East Point strip mall with the woods. And did you notice how it lingered? You know, he walks from left to right on the screen, the shot, and then it lingers on the strip mall. And I didn't notice it the first time I watched it, but like the third time I watched it, I was like, they were very careful to show that tree line. Okay, so this is what I discovered about the episode that just thrilled me to no end. I wondered what that jazz song was that was playing as they showed.
Yeah. I think he's like sitting down eating.
Yeah. And as he's walking, you know, as they show that montage of him spending time with himself. So, which again, to me, when I tell you what I discovered about the song, it will make me question whether or not this whole episode was, in fact, a dream. Taria and Ramakrishna is the name of the Alice Coltrane song that was playing as Alfred walks from the nail salon, goes and eats at Crystal, and then continues walking through East Point. Taria is a pure consciousness or a state of restful alertness that underlies and transcends consciousness, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. So it's the fourth state of consciousness, because the first state is consciousness, the second state is dreaming, third state is dreamless sleep, and then there's Taria. Taria is where foundational self is realized and where one reaches pure awareness of their own dual self with everyone and everything.
Oh, wow.
Ramakrishna, and see, this is what'll hit you as well. Ramakrishna was a yogi who emphasized God realization as the supreme goal of all living things and viewed women and gold as obstacles to God realization.
Oh.
He allegedly was disgusted by women as lovers and believed that humans always exist between a potential reality and a past reality. So it seemed to me that just the way that he was interacting with Sarah, like he appreciated her to a certain extent, but he was just like, I'll pass. And Darius had that same attitude with the strip club. That whole state with Ramakrishna, where believing that humans exist between a potential reality and a past reality, he's very much, Alfred is very much in this in-between state of, like, he's not a regular person anymore, but he's not quite an ultra celebrity either.
Right. Yeah.
That song was so telling, and I was just like, oh. Another question I had is, when he meets those three guys who will eventually rob him, why does he have no problem with telling everyone who he is? If they say, are you Paperboy? Like, you know, whatever. I just look like that fool. That's what I would do if I wanted to be left alone.
Right. I honestly don't think it ever occurs to him to do that. Or it could be, you know, there has to be a part of him that likes it, you know, like being recognized. So it could be that, or it could be it never enters his mind. Or maybe because they could easily be like, yes, you are. And maybe he doesn't want to get into that. I don't know.
But it's never a normal
exchange.
But it's
like you have some. Yeah, because he's always like, yeah. I would look at that as like, are you lying? Because you hesitated.
When he reveals his identity, you know, and I guess he is highly recognizable at this point. But every time he reveals his identity, he either gets asked to be put on or, you know, they take a picture or try to get a picture with him in the midst of a drug deal. Or it's just something that's not, it's not cool, you know, and I can see why celebrities like Michael Jackson wore these elaborate disguises. Or like Rihanna, she goes to Europe to live a normal life, because if she gets spotted on the street here in America, she's getting mobbed. So I just like, he's gotta, but he wants to keep it real, right? But you can't at one point want to keep it real and just be a nobody, but at the same time, just love this attention being lavished on you.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I feel like there's a part of it that he wants. That's why I feel like when Sierra was dancing to his song, you know, turning it up, he looked tired of it, but he also kind of smiled. Like, that's the thrilling thing. Something that you did is on the radio and people are recognizing you and you're famous. Alfred wants that and he doesn't want it. He like wants it on his own terms, which is just not going to happen. And like that man told him in the woods, you know, you have to make a decision. Sierra told him the same thing. You have to decide what you're going to be. You can't have it both ways. And you made this song, you know, in the first season, you're doing these celebrity basketball games and wanting to be interviewed. Well, now it's happening and there's no turning back now.
But I think as we were commenting yesterday, it's moments like that where you need your mom. You know, anytime you go through some change in your life, you want a parent or some guide to be there. And he doesn't have a relationship with his dad. He's got his cousin who he's just like, yeah, Ern's not capable of doing this and that and the other. He's got Darius, who's, we don't know. He doesn't have the comfort of having someone who's blood, who knows you from the time you entered this world, you know, to offer that mentorship, that guidance, that comfort.
Yeah, and knows who he really is and has like a shorthand with, and he doesn't have to put on. You don't have to put on for your mama.
And that makes me really sad for him.
Yeah. But, I mean, we've said that before. Alfred has seemed sad from the first time you met him. It's his eyes. Like, there's a lot. Like, he's always carrying around a lot, you know, and whenever things happen to him, which there have been a lot of things that have happened to him, he always just kind of handles it with a just like heavy sigh and like, of course this is happening.
And the way those kids switched from fans to like, we gonna rob you.
Yeah. And it was really, really scary. One of the guys, the one who was like, if you're looking at it from Alfred's point of view, the one who's to the far left, the camera, at one point it was kind of beside Alfred or kind of behind him. You could see his face change. That was the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life, because they were so like, oh, hey, great. Wow. I love that song. I drive my mama crazy with that. And it just sounded like, okay, it's, you know, these regular kids. And the one who was the most non-threatening, at least to me, was the one with the gun. He looked like one of my students, who's like my favorite student, or is really, really smart and maybe gets into trouble, but isn't really a bad kid. And I mean, he was the one that actually had the gun and then kept trying to use it, like even after he's lying on his back. But the other guy with the dread, his face just changed to like, oh, okay. And you could see him looking. He looked Alfred up and down, and he spotted the watch. You could see him stop and focus in on something that was kind of low. And then he's the one that said, you know, he told his friends, hey, I got his watch. And he takes off running. And then the other one snatches his chain, or his, I don't know if it's like a beaded thing or if it was a cross, but he snatched it from around his neck and kept running. Yeah. Okay. And then the other boy is like, I know I'm on my back and everything, but I'm going to still try to shoot you, which baffled me, because it's like, okay, this may have been a dream, because to me, it doesn't make sense. Like, okay, this is a celebrity. We've already established that. Y'all were trying to rob him. Your friends have already gotten off of him what they're going to get, and now you just want to kill him? Like, that didn't make sense to me. So now that I'm thinking about it, if I'm just with my friends and I'm getting into it, I pulled out the gun, it didn't quite work, and now it's pretty much just me, and this, like, Paperboy has already shown that he can fight. I mean, he headbutted him. So I'm going to still, like, now I just want to kill him? That makes no sense.
The whole thing of him just taking a walk, like, call an Uber. Or if you need to spend some alone time, like, go to a damn movie so you can sit in the dark or something.
Yeah, it didn't make sense, but it did kind of track with, you know, his whole I'm regular thing. He seems determined to, it's like, all right, dude, you're regular, but now you're just being stupid.
Yeah, and you could regularly get your ass kicked.
Just like a regular guy.
And then another thing is, he proves again that he's not interested in becoming a criminal, because he could have hurt those little dudes if he wanted to, but he's uninterested in actually taking a life or hurting anyone badly.
He's also still on probation.
That would have been self-defense. When that guy pulled the gun on him, he immediately grabs the gun. Why didn't he grab it the second time? You know, when the guy points it at him, he's just like, oh shit, and runs. He was standing over, the guy is on the ground. He's standing over them. I think he could have easily overpowered that guy, taken the gun out of his head, kicked him a couple of times, and then escaped through the woods.
You think so? I felt like he was standing over him, but he was kind of far back. It seems like by the time, like, if that guy was serious about shooting him, by the time he would have made it to him, he could have gotten off a couple shots. He wasn't, like, directly over him, because the camera, if I'm remembering this right, it was like, I mean, he was standing over him, but not directly. He was kind of a ways back. So lunging towards him could have, you know, unless he's the Flash.
When that guy was on the ground, because he actually, it seemed like he moved away from him and, you know, and created that distance that you're talking about. But he had every opportunity to take that gun from the guy and either throw it in the woods or hit him with it or something. And he didn't go that route. So again, I'm just like, wow, like, this is, you really made this conscious decision for whatever reason, but why? And then he runs into the woods and the fear on his face as he's hiding. The fact that those boys, it sounded like they came in after him, but I don't think they actually did.
No, I don't think they did. It was like, April Boy, you know, which was like, okay, is this dude gonna really clearly. The other two boys ran away. And when the caption came up, it said teen. So it's like, okay, is that still the boy with the gun? Are you going to chase him through the woods? This makes no sense.
I wouldn't go into any of these woods. I'm not a woodsy type of girl. Now, I'll go camping, but that needs to be like a campground with a shower. Continuity era, woods don't look like that in January. According to Alfred's phone, it was January 9th. The woods in Atlanta, they're full of deciduous trees. There's also like the Georgia pine, where it retains its needles all year. But any deciduous trees or trees where the leaves fall off, where they're mature, they will have fallen off by then. You already have the fall colors come in. And then by December, January, those trees are bare. That this scene was obviously not shot in January, or maybe they went to another place or created in the studio. I don't know, but that's not how the woods look in Atlanta in January. But given that, the other thing that I found in my research on what the woods symbolize, again, in analytical psychology, the forest is said to represent femininity in the eyes of a young man, or an unexplored realm full of the unknown, standing for the unconscious and its mysteries. There's a connection also with motherhood, because the forest or the woods is a place where life thrives. I'm like, okay, this was such an artistic episode. Him going into the woods, and first it's a safe place, you know, it's nurturing and caring, and then it's like, wait a minute, where am I? You know, it's scary. And then that dude starts singing. Well, he sings two songs. He's singing the same song his mother was singing, Leaning on the Everlasting, mm-hmm. and then he also starts singing Thank You for Being a Friend.
yeah. I was like, is that Golden Girl? And then he stops and says, you're just like, well, first he said, I lost my baby. And then he says, you're just like your mama, which kind of like makes Alfred kind of like freeze. Like, what?
Could there be random mums living out in the woods in Atlanta? Yeah, definitely. I've seen tents set up along the freeway. I've seen people come out of the woods. I've seen people walk along the freeway like it's a sidewalk. I guess that's also that. So Atlanta, there's probably bums in them woods.
The more we talk about this, this is all mystical too. Like the whole thing, because yeah, okay, I'm convinced this is a dream.
The way Alfred's skin was colored, the Alfred's coloration in the woods, I'm like, was there a problem with the lighting? Because he just seems so much darker than what he really is. It was jarring, and I wondered if that was intentional. When the bum says, let me give you this money, you know, and then he was like, well, I got this chapstick, but I don't, the bum is concerned with germs.
Yeah, which I was like, dude, your house is trees. Okay, another moment that was, it wasn't a school, it was just funny. When they came to this point where they sat down, and he just like pulls a bottle out of nowhere, and then he said, you come into folks' houses, disrespecting them. I fell out like, oh, this is this house, like this is this little setup, which would explain like where that bottle come from. Like he just like, pulled it from up under like a log or something. Like it was his cabinet. It's like, okay. I mean, that's when I was still thinking like that this was actually happening. I'm convinced now it's a dream, because it's crazy like dreams are, where there are familiar, there are things that you recognize because it's from your life and it's coming out of your head, but they're happening in a way that makes no sense. Like the chapstick thing, and that, let me give you some money, that's something that your mom would say to you, you know? So you've convinced me. This was totally a dream. This was him still asleep on that couch.
Yeah, when he threatens with the box cutter, you know, and it looks like he's really saying, you need to make up your mind what you're going to do, how you're going to get out of this.
Right.
You know, which was such a weighted statement. And then Alfred slips away from him, and the guy keeps on threatening him. Like, is he actually talking to him? Because he's not looking at him or pointing his direction anyway. And then suddenly Alfred finds himself out of the woods and behind a gas station.
And yeah, and when I saw that the guy was no longer looking at him, the first time I watched it, I was like, is he blind? But then that didn't make sense if you go back and look at some of the other things he was doing. So yeah, it's very symbolic. And then when he goes into the convenience store and the boy recognizes him, he embraces/resigns himself to it. And the boy didn't even ask him for a picture. Alfred offered. I mean, he did just continue to like stand there and stare. So it was like, you want a picture? And he's like, yeah. You know what I mean? Because that was the most polite fan, I think, because I think he was kind of like, I don't want to ask him, you know, or maybe I do. And then, or with this, like, still being a dream, it was weird if you look at it, how after the boy asked if he was Paperboy, he just stood there. He didn't say anything. And, you know, and then Alfred asked if he wanted a picture. I also thought it was weird when he took the pictures, like, he didn't wipe his mouth or anything. He just looks crazy. Like, you're a celebrity. Somebody's going to be like, yo, y'all saw Paperboy? I was like, what's wrong? What happened? That's not going to do anything but bring even more attention. Yeah, this
was a dream.
It was like, he didn't clean himself up or anything. He just smiled. He was like, yeah. Like,
and when he was standing outside the refrigerator selecting what drink he was going to get, he was humming Leaning. He was humming the gospel song. He just smiles for the picture, blood on his teeth, his sweatshirt covered in dirt. He looked crazy as hell. And I was just like, there's no way this, I guess theoretically it could have happened, but I think this whole episode was a dream.
I think so too now, because it's crazy. You know how in dreams, if you might be in a familiar place like your house, but it's not quite your house. Like there are things that you recognize from your house, but you're actually at work, or the only other people who are in it are the people that you're talking to. And when he walked into the convenience store, I don't remember them showing like someone at the counter. There was one lady who kind of did a double take and looked at him because he looked crazy. And then there was the fan that approached him. But I just found it interesting that when he walked into that store earlier in the episode and the woman was all afraid of him and he looked perfectly fine and normal and clean, then he walks into the convenience store and no one really outright, I mean, again, they're just two people, but there wasn't an instance where someone kind of looked at him like, ugh, or like was scared. Like if I was working the counter and he walked in looking like that, I'd be like, okay, he might not be trouble, but trouble may be following him. So I'm scared. Like, cause it looked like, okay, you got in a fight or you kind of got beat up and you're dirty, but that didn't happen. Again, they did show the woman who was also standing and she was standing near like a different refrigerator. She did kind of look, but she didn't say anything. They didn't even show her kind of like, ooh, and like rush off. She just looked and didn't seem to think anything of it. Even the boy, like he's a fan, but fans aren't usually really respectful. They'd be like, what's Paperboy? What's wrong? Am I gonna beat you up? You know?
After that kid said that he looked like a Super Saiyan.
Yeah. Maybe son.
Confirming for me that it was a dream. Going back to Darius, he learned to make pasta in a dream. The fact that he's talking about dreams again. And then when he actually puts his foot in the skillet for this pasta he's supposedly making.
Even for Darius, that was actually my Dariusism, is him just sticking his entire foot in that pasta and like almost knocking the pan over. Like he did it and then was like, oops, oop. Like he almost knocked the entire skillet.
And I think he was putting cornflakes in that flour in the skillet. That's not how you make pasta.
Well, if you're a simulation, it doesn't really matter. It's not pasta.
That's it. This was a quick and dirty episode.
Well, really quickly, my SGR moment, of course, was when the fans turned into crazy people. I felt real fear at that moment. That scene scares me, but those actors did a great job of transforming from, you know, just regular kids to criminals, you know, or the way they did that, it didn't look like it was their first time. But again, if you're looking at it from the perspective of it being a dream, things happen like that in dreams that make no sense. And they happen really, really quickly. And all of a sudden, you're in a different setting. The more we talk about it, the more, the whole thing had characteristics of a dream, because there was just a lot that made no sense.
Thank you for listening. Rappin' Atlanta is recorded and produced by Nikki Ebo and Nita Charisse. Our theme music is Joy Clark's Galaxy Groove, performed by Joy Clark. You can follow this talented artist on Instagram at Joy Clark Music. Our show's artwork is created by Loso Perez, creative director at Prime Vice Studios. You can follow Prime Vice on Instagram at Prime_Vice. You can find us on your favorite podcast player. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe. You can follow Rappin' Atlanta on Instagram and Twitter at Rappin' Atlanta.